Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi guys, there is no regular episode this week. I managed to find myself hospitalized last week, so my publication dates got a bit mixed up. I'm fine, it's nothing to worry about, but I couldn't leave you high and dry, so today is an exclusive episode which was originally released to my subscribers, and today you get it for free. It's also going to give you a taste of what you're missing if you're not subscribed yet. You know, just saying. I hope that you enjoy this conversation with my sister Joanne, who is, of course, Taylor's mom, and I'm going to be back again next week with a new regular episode. Hello, and welcome to A Million Other Choices. I'm your host, Kim. That doesn't sound like my cup of tea, but...
For us, we're absolutely in love. And we're warm.
Well, it's warm here now, too. You know, we're having one of the hottest Januaries ever.
Really? What's the temperature?
Oh, like 5. Well, okay. Maybe it's not hot like where you are, but I'm saying, like, for January in Calgary, that's pretty hot.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah. No, it's going to be 24 here today. I think I'll be out sun tanning.
All right. Yeah, it was last night. Facebook messaged her in, me and my girlfriends have a group chat, and I said, hey, how's the boob lift, and how'd it go? And it turns out this morning I realized I sent it to Dino Mariani by accident, who is Mark Mariani's brother.
Oh, yes.
It was his brother, because I had reached out to him a while ago, letting him know that I was going to be doing this story. And oops, so then I had to do a whole thing like, I'm really sorry, and I'll check with you and find out how the boob job went and let you know.
Oh my god, that's horrific. I think that's
and I don't know how that would, don't even know how that would happen, but it, today I am mixing things up a little bit again. I have my sister with me today, Joanne, who, as you will remember, is Taylor's mom. And she's going to tell us a story from Saskatchewan, the murder of Tammy Frank. Thank you very much for coming on. I really appreciate you being here. And I know that you've put a lot of work into this story that you're going to tell us today.
I have. I even Googled a bunch of stuff.
Wow.
I know. I am going to take you today on the trail of a manhunt that left 2 people deceased and 2 critically injured.
Okay. Sounds terrible.
Yeah, it is. It is quite horrific, actually. We're going to start in Saskatchewan at a place called Little Pine First Nation. Mm-hmm. And this is where I did some Googling, because for anyone who's not familiar with Canada, I mean, Saskatchewan, it's right in the middle. It's flat. Very flat, very boring, lots of wheat fields.
Yes.
But their CFL team, the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, their fans wear watermelons on their heads to the game. So I'm thinking, why?
Yes, that is. I wondered that too. So what did you find out?
Well, I kind of got pulled down a rabbit hole of how to make your own watermelon helmet.
Oh.
It was very fascinating. It involves lots of vodka.
Of course it does. Which explains... probably most of why they're wearing them on their heads.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that it's not even like you don't even grow that in like most of the games are in the wind, like fall, right? And
right.
There's no watermelons, so the stores all out of watermelons. So no, I wish I had the answer for you, but I can tell you how to make a watermelon helmet.
So it's kind of like a Canadian mystery why the Rough Riders wear watermelons on their heads.
Yeah. No. I'm sure the answer is out there somewhere, but like I said, I got distracted with how to make a watermelon helmet. We're going to talk about Little Pine Nation for a second, because it's a Plains Cree First Nations band, and it's located about 53 kilometers northwest of North Battleford. It's at the foot of the Blue Hill and rests along the shores of the Battle River. Now, when I last checked their website, they have about 2,000 band members, and about just over 1,000 are living off reserve, and about 1,000 that are living on reserve.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And again, I did my Googling and I went through their website and their reviews, and they have lots of services on the reserve. But I did find a video where their chief was speaking out about the neglect he's seen from Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. And I also came across an article about how in 2021, the Crown transferred back the coal and mineral rights to Little Pine First Nation, which is kind of a step in the right direction about ensuring First Nations are able to obtain their reserve rights under Treaty 6. And I know that you support missing and murdered Indigenous women.
Yes, very much so.
I thought we could just have a quick chat about that, because I recently interviewed author Sheridan Taylor, who wrote the book Not Okay, Okay. And we were talking about intergenerational trauma from an Indigenous perspective, but we ended up talking about missing and murdered Indigenous women. Mm-hmm. And what was really fascinating about the conversation was how he feels it's rooted in our own colonial intergenerational trauma, that that's at the root of the issue.
So what do you mean, like our as settlers, our trauma that we had, or just that the root cause of the missing, murdered Indigenous women and girls is the colonial, the generational trauma that we as settlers put on Indigenous peoples?
Yeah, no, that it actually goes back further. It from before we even came to this country, how we came at the root of racism is fear. Mm. So we come in and just through our own intergenerational trauma of Sir John A. Macdonald. I mean, he was originally Scottish, and look what the Scottish people went through. Right. So we've carried this through generations and generations, this hate and this racism and this oppression. And then we bring it into Canada when we arrive here. It was a fascinating take on it.
That is really interesting. Really interesting, because it's almost like a forgiving nature about it, saying, okay, we understand that we've been extremely traumatized by the abuse and the neglect that we've suffered at the hands of settlers, but that they're trying to understand, okay, why were the settlers doing that? Like, that is really interesting. And I did not know that. I had heard that before. That was really good. I'm going to look more into that.
Yeah. It was fascinating. And I'm going to send you a link to a report from MMIWG that talks about what we can do as a society for anyone else that wants to get on board and support the missing and murdered Indigenous women movement, because fighting that racism is a big part of it. But yeah. To do that, we kind of need to understand racism and where it comes from.
Sure. Yeah, no, that'd be great.
One of Little Pine's residents was Tammy Frank. And Tammy was born June 13th, 1980. And she came from a huge, tight-knit family. She had tons of brothers and sisters, both biological and step. Mm-hmm. And in fact, on Monday, October 10th, 2016, Tammy was at home with her sister, Lacey. Lacey's young son, their parents, and some cousins. They had a house full. They were all at Tammy's home in Little Pine First Nation.
Right.
Tammy had a on-again, off-again relationship with Sheldon Kyle Thunderblanket, and he was from nearby Sweetgrass First Nation. But they had officially broken up in September, and it hadn't gone well.
Right, of course.
Yeah. And Tammy often acted as a stepmom to Sheldon's kids before their last breakup. And now I actually spoke with Tammy's sister, Lacey. And one of the first things that Lacey said was how much Tammy loved those kids, and that this is one of the reasons that it was hard for her to walk away. But she had finally completely ended it in September.
Okay.
And the family was worried because of Sheldon's escalating violence towards Tammy. The family members were quoted in the paper as calling Sheldon a crazy or crazed ex-boyfriend with a history of harassment and intimidation.
Okay, I can see where this is going.
Yeah, yeah, we've heard this story before. The evening of October 10th, just before midnight, Sheldon broke into Tammy's home and he had a 243 rifle. Now, a 243 loads a 6mm cartridge and it can bring down a deer. It is a large rifle that packs a massive punch. Mm. He pointed the gun at Tammy and fired two shots at her, and he wasn't done. He tried to shoot her a third time in the face, but luckily the gun jammed.
Oh my God.
He removed the round, loaded another into the chamber, and then turned the rifle on her sister Lacey and shot her in the shoulder. Now remember, the entire family was home that night, including Lacey's young son, but thankfully he only had four rounds. Then took off from the house and just left everyone in a chaos. You can
Do we know how old Lacey's son was? At the time?
Yeah, he was I think just around four, anywhere between four and six. I know he was quite little.
Oh, but old enough to be traumatized. Yeah. That's awful.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole family was left traumatized. Oh, it was heartbreaking. Cutthroat RCMP received.
You said cutthroat.
Oh, cutthroat. Thank you.
They are rather cutthroat, but.
Cut knife RCMP received a complaint of a firearm being discharged from inside a residence. Now, Cut Knife is this wee little town located just off Highway 40, northwest of Saskatoon, and about 55 kilometers west of North Battleford. So it's about 20 minutes away from Little Pine. And when the police entered the home, Tammy was found deceased and pronounced at the scene.
Oh.
And her sister Lacey was taken to the hospital. Now, I saw pictures of Lacey's injuries, and it was horrific. It blew out the entire backside of her shoulder.
Oh, my God. So she must have, she lived, I'm assuming.
She lived, yeah.
And then, well, but yeah. She would have had, I mean, months of therapy for that, and just, terrible.
It was months. And you know, as I mentioned, I had the privilege of speaking to Lacey, and she's she just had another baby. She's in school. She's doing really, really well.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I mean, her family was just left devastated. I mean, from what she said, and I know her brother wanted to speak to me too, and I didn't have an opportunity to talk to him, but Tammy was just a lovely woman.
Yeah.
Yeah, and such a tight-knit family. I mean, we know.
Well, and that's important to note. A lot of times Indigenous families, they really believe in the idea of it takes a village. So their families, it's extended family, and like, you know, friends of family become aunties and uncles. And one event like this maybe takes down one person, but God, it affects affects the entire reserve village and so many people. It's just really, really terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. And we are going to talk a little bit later on about Sheldon's family as well, mm-hmm. that, you know, it really was a tight knit group. In fact, Lacey also shared with me that after Tammy was killed, they found this journal that she had kept about all of the things that Sheldon would do and say. And she even wrote in this journal that if anything happened to her, it was him.
Yeah.
But she was so private that she never shared this with her friends and family.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a familiar story, too.
Right. I want to go on a bit of a rampage about that, because too many women hide the abuse that they face. And you and I both know that it can lead to homicide, that it is a real possibility when dealing with domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you know, there's a lot of reasons why women do hide it. And I know that so many people would say, you know, oh, if it were me, I'd, you know, but there's shame and there's fear around it. They don't want to disclose their situation because it might make them appear weak or vulnerable, and you know, or they stay quiet out of fear for their own safety. What's he going to do? A lot of abusers use like threats and intimidation to keep their victims silent.
Yeah. Well, I've talked about this a number of times because I mean, domestic homicide and domestic violence is one a type of story that I tell quite often, which unfortunately happens way too often. And I know that instinctively there's always that, you know, why didn't they just leave question? Mm-hmm. But it is such a complicated issue. And you're right. These people are the men and women that control not just with intimidation, but they also control with, you know, by tearing you down over time to make you feel like, well, it's impossible for you to do anything on your own. You need this person. And, you know, they plant these little seeds of these ideas. Well, what are you going to do? You know, when I do this, or when I take this away from you, or that, like, it is a really complicated issue. And it's not one that if you've never been in the situation, you can't really answer that question about why you didn't leave. And so for family members that are left on the outside watching, as we know, just telling the person, like, you know, your boyfriend's an idiot, or I don't like him, and, you know, he's dangerous, it doesn't do anything, because the guys on the other side saying, well, of course your family doesn't like me. They're jealous of us. They don't understand. Mm-hmm. They don't care about you the way I care about you, and completely revise their own personal history to make them believe that they're where they need to be, and that anywhere else is going to be worse.
Yeah, and the love bombing is a big part of it as well, that a lot of women hide it because they might believe the relationship is still salvageable because of that cycle that they go through with the love bombing, and then the walking on eggshells, and then the explosion. And, you know, it's yeah, yeah. No, in talking with Lacey, you know, one of her biggest questions was why, right? Well, why? So that the shooting happened Monday. By Tuesday morning, there was obviously a full-scale manhunt on for Thunder Blanket. He was wanted on charges of first-degree murder, attempted murder, and aggravated assault.
Mm-hmm.
To that Tuesday, at around 3 o'clock, police actually stopped Sheldon's vehicle about 25 kilometers west of Golden, BC, near the weight scale. So Golden is about 8 or 9 hours west of Little Pine. And they pulled him over. He failed to comply with the police orders to get out of the vehicle and instead opened fire and hit Constable Amber Brunner in the arm. Now, she was airlifted to hospital in Golden, where she recovered, but she did need reconstructive surgery done on her hand and her arm.
Do you know in your reporting if he was stopped as a result of the description put out, or was it maybe just happenstance that he got stopped for something else, like for speeding?
You know, I couldn't find any information on that. Okay. I couldn't. From the sounds of the reports, though, it sounds like they pulled him over and ordered him out of the vehicle.
Okay.
That because of the description of the vehicle. That's what it sounded like. Yeah. Just the way he opened fire. And one report I read with CBC said that Sheldon sustained a flesh wound in the forearm from what was believed to be a 9mm by the officer. So she winged him.
Yeah. Well, poor guy.
He then hijacked a vehicle. So he stopped an SUV, forced the family inside to get out at gunpoint, got in, and fled west on the Trans-Canada Highway.
Good God.
It doesn't stop there. Fearing that Sheldon was turning the car around and coming through the area again, the police ran around with their high-powered rifles, yelling at everyone to get out of your vehicles and get over to the ditch. And I'm going to quote, because this idiot's coming back and we don't want you to get hit by gunfire.
Oh, God. Chaos.
Yeah, can you imagine? Like
I would be terrified.
They were. Yeah, yeah. I read a lot of stories of people that, I mean, here they are. They're huddled in this ditch for nearly 2 hours before the RCMP deemed it safe to go back to their cars. It's October, so it's cold.
Yeah.
They're stressed out. Everybody, like, these are families with young children huddled in the ditch.
Oh.
Yeah, and I guess people were.
Well, this would have been around Thanksgiving, right? So people traveling on the road just trying to see their family or get home from seeing their family. Like, that's awful.
No, it was pretty horrific for all of them. And then so 2 hours they had to stay there, because 2 hours later they finally located his vehicle driving west to Revelstoke on the highway, and then a highway pursuit ensued. So they tried to stop him using spike belts and roadblock, and they even opened fire on him. They fired 11 shots at the vehicle. One of them struck the SUV in the driver's side mirror, but none of them hit him.
Yeah.
He continued driving away until he got out of sight about 200 meters from the roadblock. He jumped out of the vehicle and then made his way down an embankment into the woods.
Okay.
So if you've ever been to Revelstoke, it's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. I mean, British Columbia in the wilderness, these dense evergreen forests.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good place to hide.
Yeah.
So police launched a major search with helicopters, dogs, tactical teams. They closed off the Trans-Canada for about 4 hours. They were doing vehicle searches, searching the area. The search was mostly focused on Revelstoke's Johnson Heights neighborhood. Now, I've been to that neighborhood, and it's pretty secluded. It's bound by there's railway tracks to the south and the west. There's the, and I'm going to pronounce this wrong, the Elisiwat River to the south, and then you've got the highway.
Yeah.
So it is kind of secluded, and there's very little development, but it's because it's cut off by the railroad tracks. And according to the city of Revelstoke, they had more than 65 people, including RCMP, emergency response teams, canine units, air services, search and rescue, CP rail police, and Parks Canada emergency responders were all out searching for him.
Wow.
Yeah. Till the next morning at 10:10 a.m., Sheldon was found dead in the river. Now, he was shot by police. So the Independent Investigations Office, or IIO, sent 9 investigators to Revelstoke to determine what happened.
Sure.
And the IIO is, they're the official BC police watchdog, and they investigate all incidents which people are killed or seriously harmed due to police action.
Right.
And the BC Coroner's Service, they did an autopsy to determine the exact cause of death. And they did find the flesh wound in his arm from the shooting near Golden.
Yep.
He had several cuts, scrapes, and contusions, as well as a head wound.
Okay.
And the IIO said they interviewed the police, civilian witnesses, reviewed video evidence, 911 calls. They examined physical evidence from both the scenes, and they determined that there was no involvement from police.
Okay, so how do we, like, okay, so he was shot in the arm, several cuts, scrapes, and contusions, and a head wound.
Yes.
Like, did he, when he was shot, did he fall down?
Nope. Running through the forest, he fell down and hit his head on a rock while fleeing the police, and died as a result of the head trauma.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
So, I mean, karma's a bitch.
A little bit. So he died because he's running from the police, trips, falls over a rock, and then then he wound up in the river. So it wasn't drowning. It was actually the head, like it actually fractured his skull.
Yeah, it was the
head.
So
he fell hard.
Yeah, tripped and hit his head on a rock.
That's crazy.
I know. Now I talked to Lacey. I asked her how she felt about his death and not having the opportunity to face him in court. Mm-hmm. And she feels it is a blessing, right? Yeah. That her and her family were spared that agony. But like I mentioned, she still wants to know why.
Right. I get it.
I've been on a mission to understand why for the past 4 years. And that podcast, Mental Health Mavens, I'm going to plug it. Sure. But I mean, technically it's a client's podcast, but they know that I selfishly have guests on to help me answer the why question. And I've talked to doctors and psychiatrists and specialists who work in the prison system, addiction specialists, and so much more.
Right.
In fact, I have an interview next week or the week after with a doctor where we're talking about forensic implications of trauma in the criminal justice system.
Hmm. Well, that would be interesting to listen to.
Yeah. It's fascinating because that why is so important.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I've talked to a number of people about that, the why question. I had a conversation a bit about it with Detective Dave Sweet, the homicide detective here in Calgary. And I just recently was talking about it with Collier Landry from Moving Past Murder. And we talked about this why question. That was originally for me, it was a big question after learning the what, because for me, for some reason, the details are super important to me, but the why was important. And that's why I started the podcast. But I've realized now that the why, I mean, for one thing, it's never really going to fully get answered because you and I don't think that way. Like we don't think in terms of murder as a solution to anything. So it's hard. So even if I sat down with Dustin and we went through and said, he said, okay, on this day, I was thinking this is exactly why I did. I still wouldn't answer it for me. So I have since moved on. And what has helped me, rather than trying to answer the why question, is the what now question. You know, what can we do now to prevent these types of tragedies in the future? And, you know, what can we do to sort of see the red flags and protect ourselves from it? And what can we do to further that person's legacy, the victim's legacy, to, you know, get their stories out there and just try to bring awareness to the issue. So I totally understand the issue of wanting to answer that why question. I get it. I get it for you and I get it for Lacey. I'm starting to take a slightly different take on that.
No, I agree. For me, I'm still on the why, because once I understand the why, then it helps. So for example, there's some reports that Sheldon was a meth user, and Lacey confirmed that, mm-hmm. which was just like Dustin. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of, there's a lot more research coming out on meth and violence. And when you think about it, you can take the sweetest, gentlest person and introduce meth or some other substances and you get someone who's completely unrecognizable. And right. That's where interviewing a lot of the doctors has really helped me in understanding brain structure and how these drugs change brain structure. And that damage is what leads to those bad decisions and the impulse control issues. I mean, I just interviewed a doctor last week where we were talking about brain injury, because you know, you hear about these serial killers, mm-hmm. and one of the common things is brain damage,
right?
Issues with that frontal cortex. So for me, when I understand the why, I can have a little bit more compassion or empathy, I can see the how. And that, for me, leads to forgiveness, which leads to healing.
Right.
But you're right. It's how do we prevent these things in the first place?
Yeah. Well, and at the end of the forgiveness part, I think that as best you possibly can, regardless of the circumstances, you have to find a way to find some level of forgiveness, never for the other person. It's never for them. It's for yourself, because to hang on to rage and anger and just that just the constant reliving of the person's last moments and all of that, just it consumes you, and the person that you've lost would never want that for you.
No, exactly. You know, Lacey and I had talked about forgiveness, and she forgives Sheldon's family in particular, that, and she actually honors them, that for every murder that's out there, there's sometimes this whole other family that's left devastated. Mm-hmm. And she gets that. I mean, you and I both still hold space for Dustin's family and care very much for those boys. And for me, even Dustin, I mean, he's such a sick boy, and my hope for him is that he finds recovery, because that's another thing with the brain and addiction is it's neuroplasticity. It heals. It does. It is possible to heal.
Mm-hmm. So, well, and if he does heal, I mean, the emotions and the regret that he's going to be left with is true suffering. I mean, that's when people say like, oh, I want him to spend the rest of his life in prison. Like that's not really suffering. The suffering comes from regret and wishing you could turn back time and that. And it's sad that, like, right now, as far as we know right now, Dustin is not, he's not making the steps to do what he needs to do. So right now he's really not suffering.
No.
And it's so sad that when and if he ever does, that's when his true suffering is going to begin. When he finally takes accountability and realizes the extent of what he lost, and what he's taken away from someone else. Now, in this case, it's even sadder because there is no opportunity for that, right? I mean, Sheldon's gone, and you know they're never going to have the opportunity to either, you know, watch him grow or have that justice. Like that's really sad.
Yeah it is. That there is some news articles that quote the family, and they're clearly grieving his loss. They lost a son, and we should honor that. And you know, you hear about these things. Okay, so there was that episode, that YouTube video that dropped on Taylor, and one of the comments was about how the parents, blaming the parents. And no.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, you can't do that.
Yeah, the victim blaming is really just that. Just don't even get me started on that one.
Yeah, I had to shut that one down. Yeah. So if there's three things that I could leave your listeners with based on this story and my experience, that is that if you're experienced in domestic violence, or if you know someone who is, that, you know, is, however overwhelming and frightening it can be, that there is resources. I mean, we always say it, reach out, there is support. And yeah. And the second being that in terms of the drugs, is that addiction recovery is possible. So I mean, I've been very open about this. I'm a sober woman, and I've stayed sober through losing Taylor and through the court shit show and everything. And in fact, my own healing journey was so much more impactful because of sobriety. And yes, you know, you do get your feelings back when you're sober. So I felt every moment of this, but because I did, I healed.
Yeah.
And yeah, that third one is forgiveness, you know, carrying that hate and that resentment only, like you said, it only blackens your own heart.
Yeah, for sure.
That was my story of the Thunder Blanket Manhunt.
Wow. Well, that was a really interesting story. It brings up a lot of issues that, of course, I'm always, I don't want to say fascinated. I think these are Domestic homicide is one that I think I understand the least about, because I just don't understand how someone in your inner intimate circle you can treat like an enemy. And why it's so dangerous when you make that decision to leave. And that sounds like very much the same here, that when Tammy made her decision that this is it, this is, and he knew that this time she was serious about it, that's when his rampage started.
And most take the lives of the spouse and then take their own lives. So it becomes a murder suicide. But for this guy, no, it was just pure hate. He was going to take her and make sure that nobody could have her again.
And I wonder what his end game was, like what he was. I mean, obviously he wasn't expecting to hit himself in the head with a rock and die. Like, did he honestly think he was just going to run into the woods and then everything would calm down and he'd just come walking out? And like, that's another piece that I don't understand the afterwards. Like, what are you thinking?
But that,
I wonder that about Dustin too. What are you thinking?
That's where the brain changes come into play. And that's the biggest thing I've learned, is that with that impulse control, there is no next thought. Right? It's only in that moment. That's as far as the brain and the thinking and the cognition can go, is I feel this.
Yeah.
This is my reaction. And that's as far as it goes. There is no reflection. There's no consequences that come to mind. That's just how the brain works.
Yeah. Well, and how scary to think that if he'd had a fully loaded rifle. I don't know anything about guns. I don't know how many bullets you can put into that kind of shotgun, but if he'd had enough for the whole family, like, that just, it's chilling.
Mm-hmm. I know. I was listening to a podcast last night where a guy took out his entire family. I think there was 9 members of his family, and then went into town and started taking out everybody that ever heard him before. And there was,
yeah,
I don't know, something like 20.
Well, and I think that was what the Nova Scotia rampage, I think that's what that was about. It wasn't just about, I'm not going to just take out my, I think they were common law, my girlfriend. I'm going after everybody that's ever gave me a hard look, because this is how I'm going out.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's crazy. Well, I'm happy that Lacey has found some forgiveness. I hope that the rest of her family, and especially her son, that's very true. I hope that they're all getting the mental health services that they need. The violence that is against the Indigenous people of Canada is shameworthy. It's and the lack of resources put towards solving those cases is really, really sad. Really sad.
No, I know. I've got a number of friends that come from different Indigenous communities. And I mean, these are strong, vibrant, amazing women.
I want to go back and give you your plugs. So we have Mental Health Mavens. Where can they be found?
Anywhere you get your podcasts.
Okay. And where can we find more about you?
Well, I have a podcast too, Empowering Nonprofits, but, if anyone ever wants to reach out, you feel free to connect them with me. I talk a lot about, addiction recovery, obviously, and grief and healing. And I'd be more than happy to chat with anyone who's struggling.
Well, and I know my listeners have kind of come to know you a little bit, because I've mentioned you a couple of times. I know there's a lot of them that are really touched by the level of forgiveness that you've been able to find for against Dustin. I think that everyone's going to be interested to hear directly from you, and then also this story, because I think this story is very interesting, and I'm glad that you told it. I'm just happy that you were able to come on and spend some time with me. And
kidding, I was so excited to do a podcast with my sister, my baby sister. Yes. It's awesome.
Yeah, and then, talking about something that's not boring, like not for profits.
Yeah.
Well, not for profits are very, they do very, very good work. But true crime is you know,
true crime is more interesting. Interesting.
And actually, you know what? I do kind of want to talk to you a little bit about that. So I think a lot of people are fascinated by both you and I's interest in true crime after what we've been through. Now, I think you were like me before Taylor was murdered. You did have an interest in true crime. Is that correct?
True crime, horror, anything spooky. Yeah.
And did anything about it change for you after Taylor's death?
Actually, something changed for me recently, and that was after that coffee house YouTube came out. Yeah. I suddenly realized, at first, my position with true crime was always like, we want to tell our stories. As a true crime survivor, yeah, I want to tell the story. It's part of my healing process. Mm-hmm. But when somebody else told the story without my consent or without their facts being completely straight, it really soured me. It really soured me. Suddenly I feel like, because you see on TikTok all this stuff about true crime and it soured me a bit. I suddenly have a different, now I'm extremely choosy about the true crime that I listen to.
Mm. And that's interesting. Well, actually, you know what? It changed for me too after Taylor's murder, because before that, I listened to a lot of the podcasts that are like, I don't know if I can even say podcast names, but like My Favorite Murder, which is probably one of the most famous ones that mixes comedy with murder. And at the time I listened to it again, and they weren't, it's not like they were making fun of the victims. I get that. They were, you know, making fun of, like, in this case, the circumstances, right? The guy trips and falls, breaks his head on a rock. But afterwards I can't do it. There's nothing funny about it. Mm-hmm. So I just don't get the comedy. Now it is interesting. Two things have recently changed for me. One is about cold cases, that somebody brought up the point about cold cases that, especially down in the States where information is revealed, you know, they're reading all these, like, I don't know if you followed the Delphi murders and this Moscow, Idaho, the murder down there. And they're reading out these probable cause affidavits and they're conjecturing about, well, maybe it was this, maybe I don't like any of that. It's all theory. None of it's been tested in court. So there's a reason why I don't do cold cases. The other thing that has changed recently, and again, like you brought up, the true crime YouTube video that did Taylor's story. I get what you're saying about how, like, you know, without asking for people's permissions, because most of the time, to be honest with you, I'm not asking for permission. So I find it super important to me to get the details as right as possible, right? Just because one report said something happened, you know, is it necessarily true? Try to actually pull the court documents when you can, so you get the actual, you know, the truth according to the that, and get those details right. And if you're not sure of the details, don't make it up.
Yeah.
You know, just to tell the story. And that's what I felt that this particular YouTuber was doing, is that he was filling in gaps with his own kind of, like, just how to make it sound more like he knew more about it than he really did. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that that's fair. If you don't know, you don't know. Because otherwise you are being disrespectful to the family. But I think I still err on the side of, for most of the people that I have talked to, because I have talked to some family members, certainly reaching out and letting them know that I'm going to be doing an episode. For the most part, they're pretty good in that, you know, but I'll tell you, you get one thing wrong and they will point it out to you. And I don't blame them. You know, if it's a mispronunciation or, you know, like it could be the tiniest little detail, they want it right.
So. Yeah, no, I see why. I really do. Yeah. And that's why I reached out to Lacey on this one, is I wanted to make sure that she was okay and make sure that I had my facts right. No, nobody had covered this story before. Ooh. And I thought it was an important story.
How did you initially come across it?
We were going out to Revelstoke. Mm-hmm. And I was just, I don't know, I just Googled true crime Revelstoke and it just came up in a news feed. I think it was really one of those things that was meant to happen, because then I emailed Lacey, or I messaged her. I found her on Facebook, and then we had a conversation, and it just seemed to be a story that needed to be told.
Yeah. And so she was good with you telling it.
I had wanted to do an interview with her for a different podcast I was thinking of doing, but I don't have time for this stuff. I don't know how you do it, Kim.
It is a weird obsession, and I think I drive Tim crazy because he doesn't like true crime, really doesn't like it. And it's all I talk about every night. I just sit while he's watching his, you know, Gold Rush or whatever he's watching, and I'm just researching true crime.
Thank you again, Kim, for the opportunity. This was a ton of fun, and I love doing the research, and it was a nice breakup from my boring nonprofit podcast. And although I do love the mental health podcast, that one's easy. The people just come on and tell me interesting things.
Yeah, I bet. I've actually watched a couple of those videos. They are interesting.
Yeah. We've got some good ones coming up for sure.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.